Just before 4:40, we will start the 4:30 meeting of having a study session. Hearing about the Public Works Department and Capital Budget. And who will be giving that presentation?
Three of us.
Okay, well, who will be speaking first? Okay, well, we'll first hear from Dan Heverling, Finance Guru of City of Blaine.
Thank you, council members, Madam Mayor. So tonight we're going to be discussing the Public Works Enterprise Fund and then also the CIP. So I'll start with going through the numbers, the overall numbers of the different public work funds. I'll probably go through that area fairly quick because there's not a whole lot of surprises there. And like I was saying before, those funds are much healthier at this point than the general fund, which is why we discuss quite a bit more on that. And then after Gary is going to be talking about the FTEs that were proposed, and the big portion of the discussion tonight will be the CIP. That's an area that needs some time to be talked about because it's some big numbers for projects that we're going to be working on. As we're going through these overall numbers for each fund, I will also discuss the rates that we're proposing. And I think that you'll probably want to talk about that too, to say, do you actually want to have these rate increases that we're proposing? And I have numbers of what that would do for your average family's bill. So overview, like I was saying, we'll talk about first the enterprise fund budgets and then the new FTEs. FTEs deferred to help conserve the funds, and then 2023 capital improvement plan.
And we don't have this paperwork anywhere as far as these budgets go, or is that?
I think it's in the packet. Yeah, you should all have it.
Are we recording this? We are recording this. Okay, and for the record, CIP is the capital improvement plan and FTE.
Yes, capital improvement plan.
Employee.
Yes.
Just in case someone ever listens to this recording, they may not know what we're talking about.
So the very first one that we're looking at is the electric fund budget. So you can see overall 2023 budget is 8.2 million, which is very good. Last year, 2022 is 7.2 million approximately. And then down on the expenses, like I was saying, as we've looked at these, none of them are really jumping out as something that I noticed that's an issue. The electric fund is all tracking just what we're expecting. So total operating expenses is $9 million versus $7.8 million in 2022. And then ending operating net position of $1.7 million, approximately, rounded up, versus 2022 of $1.6 million. And we still are able to keep our 60-day operating target balance, and it's of 1.5 million, which is great. So there's nothing there in the electric fund that really jumps out, except for just as we'll be talking about that, you know, electric fund is the one area that is a challenge with trying to recruit people. So we're doing the best we can with trying to fill these positions, but it is one where we're a little bit challenged just trying to get people to come here and be linemen in the fund, but we're working on it.
Dan, this is what I want to make sure that I'm reading this right. So the budget for 2022 is what we had anticipated spending.
Yes.
The forecast is what we are probably actually going to spend, right?
Yeah, the forecast, we did the same thing as the general fund where we're looking at actuals of 2022. And then those are the numbers that we're using for 2023. However, this one's different than general fund that we didn't keep it flat. So this was one where we can raise rates, which that's what we proposed. So that way our revenues would go up. And then expenses, I believe in general, most of those we were looking at just the salaries and benefits that I put those numbers in there, and it's just cost of living adjustments that have made those numbers go up by depending on what union everyone was in. That was anywhere from 4 to 10%, depending on the union. But yeah, in general, these are similar to what we did with general fund, where we looked at the actuals for 2022, and then we annualized them, and those would be the numbers used for 2023. Oh, so I can see here for the electric fund, the rate increase that we proposed is 8%. So that's to keep track with inflation. Inflation is right around 9%. So we put in an 8% increase.
Okay. What part of the bill is that going to be on? What is that 8% of everything or 8% of one particular?
8% for the electric portion of their bill.
The electric portion of the bill. Yeah. Okay.
So I can talk about now all the percents that we put in here, and then when I'm done with all these, I'll tell you what that does for an average family. But what we're proposing is...
Sorry, before we move on to that, I just want to make sure. Professional services, that is just... that is employee wages, correct?
Professional service, or what, you have personnel services? Personnel. Yes, that's employees. Yeah, that's employees. So that's our staff that we anticipate hiring, or staff that's already here. So water fund, we put in an increase of 17.5%. That number came directly from the rate study consultants. So they said you need to do 17.5% in 2022 and again in 2023. So that's the proposal for water, the increase. Sewer, 8%, stormwater, 8%, and electric, 8%. Those 8% were all just pegged with inflation. So that's what we propose, is to at least keep that number up with inflation. So next one, water fund budget. This one is not quite as healthy as the other funds, but it is getting better. So it is one that I've said before that we do want to keep our eye on, just to make sure that it's trending the way that we want. But overall, I'm very pleased with these numbers. It's coming in. It's coming in really well, so it's not something that I think at this point is going to be a problem anytime soon.
Is this where our fiscal improvements, like more access to the under, like the drilling and wells and pumping and all that, or is that in these figures?
That's in the capital portion of it, yeah. But it's in these numbers, yes, because okay. We have capital. The capital will be in the CIP portion, but we do have money that goes into the capital reserve. But what you're looking at here is operating expenses.
Okay.
So not capital.
That's what I was asking you.
So total operating revenues, $2.2 million, which is a good increase over $2 million for 2022. And we do have control over that with the rate increases that we put in here. Overall operating expenses of $2.2 million. So we do have a slight decrease there from $2.5 million of 2022. And that's just the reason why that went down a bit is because we're putting in less into the capital outlay. That we don't want to keep doing that. You want to make sure you're putting money into capital. However, this is the one fund that I was saying is a little bit tighter than the other one. So we're putting in a little less into capital outlay for now, just because we want to make sure we have money still in the ending operating net position and we're not taking a negative. So we lowered that a bit, which is why we had overall total operating expense of $2.2 million versus $2.5 million in 2022. So that allowed us to have an ending operating net position of $165,000, which is less than 2022's ending of $450,000, slightly below the target balance, but it's close. So this is the one that, you know, I'm definitely keeping my eye on to make sure that that fund stays healthy. All the rest of them, though, are fine, the other funds besides water. And like I was saying, we have a 17.5% increase that we're putting in water for rate increase. Stormwater fund, this is also this fund. I don't see any issues with it. The total operating revenues, $861,000 versus $841,000 for 2022. Total operating expenses of $918,000 versus $1.2 million in 2022. And this is another one where we also are scheduling a little less to go into capital reserves to make sure that the fund stays healthy and the ending fund balance is near the goal that we want. So both water and stormwater, we do want to bump up the amount that we're moving into capital reserves in the future. But for 2023, we lowered those amounts just to make sure we could have a good ending net position, which is scheduled to be 73,000, which is real close to the target balance of 76,000. And that, like I was saying before, is 8% is the proposed increase for rates. Sewer fund, total operating revenues of 5.4 million, just slightly beneath the 5.6 million of 2022. However, that is because we had less for USDA reserve account. That was a one-time thing. So we don't have that money again in 2023, which is why that one's less. But charges for services, you can see, increased by 5.4 million from 4.9 million in 2022. So that's good. That's with the 8% increase that we put in there for the rate increase. Overall total operating expenses, $6 million, which is right about exactly what it was in 2022, $6 million. And that gives us an ending net position of $473,000 versus $665,000 in 2022. And we're right at the target balance of 30 days. One thing I will propose, not for this year, but for 2024 potentially or 2025, is we should bump up those target balances and make them 60 days, which would then also be similar to general fund just because it's healthier. You know, the more we have at those ending fund balances, the better. And 60 days would be a better target than 30 days. But we can do that in the future. We don't have to do that this year. And sewer fund has an 8% increase in it for rates.
And even with the 8% increase, it still shows up for more than $500,000 below revenues, correct? Expenses versus revenues.
Yes. Yeah, the expenses are about a half million above the revenue at this point in the sewer fund. Street fund, this is another one that we just, it's a continual battle every year to try and get street fund to be healthy. It's one that we do have to fund quite a bit from REIT and general fund. So for 2023, we're not transferring anything in there from general fund just because general fund's already hurting. In past years we have. We're increasing the amount we're moving in there from REIT, which will help them. But total operating revenue is $482,000, down from the $550,000 of 2022. A big area that we're struggling in there is the gas tax. So gas tax is not coming in the way that we were expecting, and that is unfortunate. That's an area that I was hoping would be around $120,000, which was the budget for 2022, especially with the border opening. But it's just not doing that so far. So that is an area that we're keeping our eye on to figure out what's going on with the gas tax.
Isn't the graph still going up on that? Because I remember 6 weeks ago, you said it wasn't performing well. I said it hasn't performed better over the last 2 weeks. And I got an affirmative from you. So in the weeks since then, isn't it still climbing?
It is starting to go back up. And I'll be getting another report here soon to see if it's still climbing. But yes, it is climbing, but it's not climbing anywhere near the $120,000 that the budget was,
right,
which is unfortunate.
Well, looking at fuel going into next year, fuel continues to stay high. It doesn't matter. It's high price fuel people aren't going to buy, and we're getting it based on per gallon, not necessarily percentage of sales. So as long as it's high, that's going to continue to be low.
Right. I don't know for certain if this is what's happening, but one thing I think possibly is happening is people are going to the Silver Reef Casino where it is cheaper. So potentially they're bypassing Blaine and buying it there. And in the past, they weren't doing that as much and they were just going across the border for gas and then driving back home. I think now they might be doing more combined trips where they're driving farther south and then going to Silver Reef and buying stuff in Bellingham. So I don't know if that's exactly what they're doing, but Because people are showing up in this area. They're just not buying gas.
For some reason. Yeah, I wonder how like Linden, Sumas, but Roberts, how they're faring with all of it. That's right. Similar.
Well, also there's a lot more electric cars.
Yeah,
electric cars. And this is why in our legislative discussion with our legislative people that we're looking, because statewide, the state is trying to say, what are we going to do to make up the difference from the fuel? And they've got to think of other ways of getting that tax for the roads.
Yeah, I think they're starting to look at taxing electric vehicles differently for the portion of the gas tax that used to pay for road repairs. And so forward thinking, I understand we're just doing a budget review here, but forward thinking, we might have to start bearing in mind if our goal is to tax the wear and tear on our roads from everybody entering here from Canada or passing through here on the way to Canada, we might have to look at other ways of capturing that.
Yeah.
Well, and that may come in the form of, legislative bills to say X number of local dollars toward electric tax goes to whatever, especially in the case of someone like us who a big percentage of ours used to come from gas tax. So, but as far as the 54,000 forecasted, what has it been in the last 3 months?
For the gas tax?
Yeah.
I'll look at that as soon as I'm done with my part and Gary talks, I'll look at that on my computer.
Great.
So total operating revenue, $482,000, which is less than 2022 budget of $550,000. And the main reason for that is gas tax was a lot less. Total revenue, though, is $807,000 versus $770,000 in 2022 because we're transferring in more from REIT to cover the street repair and street maintenance that we need. Expenditures, total expenditures of $941,000. Versus $789,000 in 2022, which leaves an ending fund balance of $86,000 versus $168,000 in 2022. And we're right at a little bit above the target balance because we're moving in more money from REIT. Last one, PW admin. So total operating revenues in this of $1.4 million versus $1.37 million in 2022. And then total operating expenses of $1,498,000, which leaves ending fund balance of zero. And that's because that's an internal service fund. So we always try to keep that around zero, the ending fund balance, or slightly above zero. So whatever we, the expenses, we just make sure we have enough revenue that we charge other departments to cover it all. So the last piece I want to talk about before we move on to Gary is what this rate increases will do to a typical bill. So that way you can consider if you want these percents in there that we proposed or if you want to change them. The one, though, that we definitely should keep in there for sure is the water one, because the consultants, we have to keep that 17.5% or else we might have more trouble in the future with water. So in 2022, the typical water monthly residential bill at 7 CCFs was $23.39. So in 2023, with this increase proposed, it would go up to $27.49, so about an extra $4 per month. Sewer is $115.08, and with this increase, it would go up to about $124.29, so just about $9 a month more. Stormwater, $6.17, that's 2022. We go to $6.66 in 2023.
I'm sorry, one more time for
storm. Storm is $6.17 in 2022. In 2023, that would go to $6.66 per month. Electric at 1,000 kilowatts an hour. So that's just kind of an average of homes that are using. We go from $82.24 in 2022 up to $88.82 in 2023. The total for 2022 is approximately $227 on your typical family bill. And with these increases proposed, it would go to $247 and 26 cents. So it's a total increase of $20.38 a month if you accept these proposed rate increases.
So all of the rate increases you're suggesting would be about $20 for an average family.
Yeah, per month.
And that would result in the figures we just went through are based on that happening?
That's correct. Okay. Yeah. So it would increase about $20.38 a month for your typical family bill with these proposed increases. And those proposed increases are in the numbers that I presented.
So that's 20 for the average family bill.
Correct.
And you basically took the increase divided by the number of homes, essentially your number of residents.
The consultant provided these numbers in the past, and yeah.
So it doesn't take into account commercial or
those numbers are just looking at your typical
industrial area. Yeah. Okay. So well could be
a lot more
commercial, for example, yes. It might be less because they buy more potentially.
Right.
Okay.
And that 1,000 kilowatt hours, that's your average bill that someone's using for electric. So that's just for proposal to show you what these changes are. That's where they got that from.
And with the increase in electrical crews going from 1 to 2, you know, we got a big jump there, 421,000. I know that there was talk of increasing the base rate, which would have nothing to do with this $82 to $88. Right. So is there a need for an increase in the base rate as well on this electrical moving forward?
I can discuss that a little bit when I get up and talk about employees, but we are getting some interest and he and Mr. Crawford are working on a potential second offer letter to go out here shortly. So.
Oh yeah, I'm not concerned with your hiring practices. That's going to take as long as it takes, but I'm concerned on paying for it, right? And so if we're going to discuss genuine rates now, we're going to discuss what it really would cost. We can't not talk about that potential increase. I know Sam at one point had put in front of us something that said this base increase, which was significant.
It is
not unreasonable, but it was something that we should definitely discuss. So,
approximately what it was when the numbers that I gave to Sam was that to get it up to when we were talking about bringing in two crews, which we're not there at all at this point, but if we had two fully staffed crews, it went from somewhere around the typical monthly bill right now is about $8 on the base rate. And to pay for all those extra people to bring in that would be our employees, it was putting it up to somewhere around $25 to $30 a month just for the base rate. Now, the other idea that was kind of kicked around was, well, what if we had BPA do it and with their costs instead of bringing in extra crews? That put it up to around $45 a month from $8 to pay for it. So, yeah, that's not... So, yeah, that's what the base rate would have to do. If we hired in the staff that we would need, which I believe we're not proposing that at this... I'm not sure. Are we proposing all those extras or...?
We're getting closer.
Okay.
So we're getting close.
So at some point, we haven't hired all of them yet, but probably by 2024... If we hire all those extra people that had talked about, we'd need to discuss potentially moving that monthly base rate for residents up to around $25 to be able to pay for that.
So I'm not in favor of kicking the can down the road on this one. I'm in favor of talking about it today. And if it doesn't go, fine. If we need to do a mid-year, whatever, fine. But I think it needs to be discussed genuinely to say, does this base rate need to be kicked up? Because the last thing I want to do is have to emergency kick a base rate up because we hired two people that we knew we were going to hire for a year. So I don't want to do it. The thought of increasing electrical that much is very painful to me.
Yeah.
But it's something that we've got to look at.
There's a big problem. There's a lot of like one single person on a pension in a home who we're already talking about going from an average bill of 220 up to an average bill of 240 or 245 or something like that. But if we're going to have to do it, rather than it all happening once, is where I'm agreeing with you, Eric, rather than doing it all at once. Dan, did you say that base rate would go from $8 up to what figure?
It's around 25. But so what I think we should do on that is I think we should wait to potentially do a mid-year budget adjustment on that monthly base rate. because I need to look at the numbers more on that. Because when I sent that proposal to Sam, I believe I was hiring four new people, and I don't think we're doing that.
So, what Eric and I might be like-minded on here is it's going to have to go up at some point, and we can do it in graduated chunks. So if you're talking about going from 8 up to 24 or something, I'm saying we can go from 8 up to 14 or something immediately and just start banking that, because we're going to have to do it at some point. And rather than doing it all at once, and we could, if a majority of council could agree on you know, taking one increment towards that immediately, then it kind of our ratepayers can adjust to it better, and then we can just start banking some of that now because we will need it, right?
Yeah. So if at some point we would, yes. And I believe right now, if we're not doing the four that was the thing we were talking about a couple of months ago, which is where I got those numbers for. So if it's only a couple now, then that's not going to have to be as high. But what we're proposing right now is 8%. So that would raise the base rate by less than 80 cents.
Yeah, I think Eric and I are both like-minded on let's be more aggressive now on that because it's going to have to happen. Let's just get it started.
Yeah, I mean, at minimum, talk about it and then maybe do something about it.
Yeah,
talk about it again in 3 months, but at least something.
So we could do 8% increase in electric plus raising the monthly base rate up to $12 from 80.
Yeah, I'm prescribing that unless you think that's insane. That sounds like
I don't think that's insane to go from 8 to 12.
Yeah,
it's just $4 increase.
I would like to see what this base rate pays for, because the way I'm talking, I feel like, well, it pays for salaries, but that may not well be the case, right? An increase in rates, we end up paying for salaries. So if we do what it paid for, then we know how much to spend on it. So that would be between you guys to figure out.
It pays for everything in the electric fund, which is mainly salaries. So
there you go. Yeah.
I mean, in all of our funds, the majority of every cost is salaries, except for capital, which, you know, now you got a huge chunk to build something, but it's most all the time it's salaries is our number one cost here.
I need some clarification. I understand we're talking about base rates concerning electric, but are there customers within the city who don't get all of these services? So you have customers who maybe are on a well or septic, and maybe they only get electric and they don't get the full bundle. Do you have deconsolidated customers?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There are customers that are electric only. There's some that are not on a well or that are on a well. But yeah, there are customers that are just electric. There are customers that are just water and sewer, not electric.
So when we're talking about base rate, we're just talking electric. Do you have a base rate for
all of them have base
all
rates.
All of them,
yes.
All of them have base rates.
Yes.
We're just talking about a base rate for electric.
Right? Yes, for those two who it's applicable.
Okay.
And yeah, if we were going before the proposal was, it was 8 to around 24, 25. So I think that's not, I think a $4 adjustment would definitely help right away, plus the 8% on all electric. So that would be an addition where you do $4 in the base rate now.
And I think the only other one that has a true base rate would be water.
Water,
right?
Correct.
Because sewer.
It's 100 and.
Sewer and stormwater essentially always.
Yeah, they're flat fees.
But
so water.
Once or $500.
Right. Water would be the other one that has a base rate.
Do we know when the latest base rate was increased?
Is it 2022?
Oh,
the last year.
And before then was the base rate. I know you said those.
Oh,
I just don't have that.
So each year, I'm not sure if or when we've done a time where we just said we're going to increase just the base rate and nothing else.
Right. Okay.
But in 2022, the water was increased by 17.5%, all the costs, which is what it's going to be again this year if council approves it.
Sorry, I was talking specific electric base rate.
Oh, yeah, last year's increased by 3.5% was the rate increase for electric.
So the base rate as well as the
was 3.5%.
The kilowatt hour rate.
With regard to stormwater, you have people who live within the city who do not pay that stormwater cost. Is that right?
I have to check on that. I'm not sure about that.
Because I live within the city limits, but I don't think that I'm on septic and a well, and we're with PSE. So how does the city charge me for stormwater?
I need to look into that. I don't know off the top of my head on that.
I'm just wondering if there's like a part of the community that isn't paying in, even though we're contributing to stormwater, right? Is there a
that is true that
that is contributing to a problem that isn't carrying their responsibility?
There is a portion of the city that's not paying, yes.
So if you want to get from your place down to Costco or not have to drive through a lake in the middle of the road, that's something that in theory you should be contributing to.
Well, I'm just identifying that there appears to be a segment of our community that may not be paying into the sewer fund that potentially should be.
I can definitely get back to you on that piece of who's paying, like, how do we...
What's type of water bill?
And then there's
storm is tied to the water.
So if you're on a well, you're not paying.
So if you're paying the water bill, you are paying storm then. So if you're not paying water, you're not paying storm.
So historically, do we know if that was a bill of convenience or was it just something we never thought about because everybody was on water? Yeah. I mean, you would know better than anybody.
If you live out in the county, you pay city storm also if you have water.
If you have water. So it's just, there's no statute that says they can't, they don't pay it because they don't pay a water bill. It just never had been.
It's tied to the water bill.
Okay.
So it's paired then. So unless someone's receiving tap water from us, they're not paying for what happens with all the water that just comes out of the sky and has to get down the streets and past everybody. Well, I don't think that makes as much sense.
Right.
We could change, you'd have to change the municipal code, but.
Well, then we might want to look into that, please.
Yeah, we need to look at not only what the bill is and how many, but what the code actually says. Back to electrical real quick. So that 8% increase, that's not only to the per kilowatt hour, but to the base rate.
Right. Yeah, that would be, so the base rate would go up by less than 80 cents then.
Sorry, do you feel like he has a clear direction for the stormwater stuff?
Or for all the, so first for all the rates are, yes, is council okay with those proposed rates?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, I think we kind of all had that discussion, and although I don't know if any of us were overly excited about having to increase rates, it's unfortunately something that has to be done because it, in the past decade, it really wasn't.
Right.
So now we're just playing catch up. Now we just look like the bad guys doing it, but in reality, it should have been done.
That's one reason why the water fund is suffering, because there was 5 or 6 years where no rate increases were done back in 2010 through like 15, where it wasn't even increased to match inflation. So there's just none. No,
well, these are services our people in this town are directly receiving here. This isn't that because we're trying to repay Rich right. Billings Pink or hold a fare on Peace Board of Breath.
Right.
Like the fee schedule discussion,
I mean,
things are done incrementally, and it doesn't have as much
of
an impact.
Correct. And then the other quick question then is council, is that a direction you'd like to go of doing a flat 4 to some dollar amount increase on electric base rate plus the 8%?
Is that something where we just give you direction and then you tee it up to us and then we vote at it at a later meeting?
Yeah, you'd be voting. You're not voting today on any of this. So it'd be right. Voting either at the end of November or the first council meeting in December to pass the budget.
Would it be too hard of an ask to see, okay, if we base rate by $4, $5, $6, this is what the impact on the budget would look like?
Yeah. Yeah, so $4 increase, there's... around 3,500 customers. So that's going to give you an extra 12 grand.
And Ryan, Dan was saying we're eventually going to need about $12. And I was just saying, like, let's just get $4 of that going right away just so that we can ease into it.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, is that
or not? No, and you know, if we're going to ask it for 4, 5, or 6, why don't we just ask for like 4, 7, and 10, because we know that 8 is going to be twice as much as 7, as much as 8. You know, it's a math problem at that point.
Yeah. Well, now that I know, you know, roughly 35, I can figure it out.
Okay, we're good.
With the $4 or?
Yeah. If you could just prepare us what the $4 would look like, we can multiply it by.
Yeah, I can put that in there to do a $4 monthly base rate increase plus 8% yeah. overall in electric.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then also, if you could look at that other potential municipal code about
changing the uni code,
everybody having a share of the keeping the roads free of water, which affects everybody no matter where they get their tap water from.
Yeah, I could discuss that with Dave, and I can look into that and see on what we'd need to do to change the muni code for that.
Yep. I'd like to look at that option. Thank you.
Okay. So we'll move on now to
Gary.
And then while he's talking, I'll look up the question you had about the last 3 months on gas tax, just to see how that increase has been.
Yeah, not a big deal. Thank you.
Evening, Madam Mayor, council members. Pleasure to be here before you tonight to kind of chat about some of the FTEs that we mentioned here in the past and kind of some of the Councilmember Higgins asked about some of the cost saving, you know, that we could do, you know, moving forward. And I just want to kind of discuss some of the things we've done, you know, even this year in cost savings. So at Public Works, you know, we watch these budgets like a hawk, you know, so we're projecting, you know, one of my big pet peeves is going over budget, and I don't like to do that. So we've really been watching things to make sure that we stay under our ops budget. So we're watching that like a hawk. So we went back and we kind of just looked at 23. We're going into a little bit of an uncertain time. So we, you know, we want to go into it cautiously and not just, you know, go into it with a lot of added cost. Now the FTEs that we've proposed that we are looking to defer until we get a vibe for what this next year is going to look like. They're all positions that we need. You know, they're all areas in which we're short, and we could get more efficient. And we, you know, there's a lot of things that these positions will bring. However, we've opted to err on the side of caution going into this. And so our engineer tech 3, our part-time janitorial assistant, maintenance worker for the parks, procurement specialist, engineer tech 1, instrument tech, and our part-time administrative assistant. We've opted to defer those, again, in abundance of caution, in a cost savings.
Can you clarify for me the difference between Tech 1 and Tech 3? Which of those is the more qualified, higher paid?
So the Tech 3 is the higher level.
Okay.
The Tech 1, what the anticipation was that with that position would be like field verifying for the GIS effort in verifying structures, verifying points, shooting it in GPS, and assisting with our mapping system that we know we're going to have to do, we know we're lacking on. However, it's not an absolute must. We do have a few positions that are musts, but that's one that we felt comfortable leaving out, seeing where we're at Q1, and kind of go from there. So that's one that we felt that we could defer.
Are any of these are any of those positions ones where you could find one person with skill sets to kind of halftime do two of those things where we get one person to knock out two or three of these lists halftime-ish?
It's possible. Not like on this list here. I have there is one Tech 3 that's built into the 22 budget that we are looking to fill. So that one Tech 3 in theory could help us out in all areas, kind of a catch-all. So that is a definite potential.
All right, great.
Of any of these that are going to be deferred, these seven positions, is any of their work contracted out to an outside vendor? And if so, how much are we talking for those?
So basically, the electrician instrument tech, that is contracted out. We utilize the same folks to take care of the plant. and our instruments in the field. We did do a cost analysis on that, and I believe wasn't it back to 2019, Dan, on the instrument tech electrician.
Yes.
I think it went back to 2019.
5 years or something.
5 years, and we've spent $150,000 in those 5 years.
Over a five-year period.
5 years.
Okay.
So there's a lot we could do with that position to take our SCADA system and our instruments to a whole other level. However, out of abundance of caution, we do have it covered, and again, we spent $150,000 in 5 years,
which means we're getting about $30,000 a year worth of value for that. So that we don't really need a full time person doing just that, right?
Well, yeah. If we had the position, there was a lot that we would do. A lot of our instruments in the field, or well fields, our lift stations, our pump stations, they're very old equipment out there.
Okay.
And
so we've been lucky.
We've been lucky. A lot of the gear out there is old, and it's hard to find parts for. So we would definitely utilize a person a lot more than calling out our vendors to come out and do
it. In-house is always going to be cheaper than the way you've been parting it out to outside?
If we look to go to the next level, yes. It would be cheaper to do it in-house because that person, we would be leveraging those people in the field, in our lift stations, a lot.
So
they would be constantly out there.
So right now that $150,000 or $30,000 a year, is the majority of that for stuff that we like must do today and no preventive maintenance? Okay.
Yes.
And of that must do stuff today, how much could of that have been deferred through preventive maintenance?
On the plant, it's in a pretty good space. So they're up on their preventative.
Okay.
You know, they do that. It's the rest of the well field and the lift stations. We could put somebody out in the field and they wouldn't come in for a year with all the work that.
And how much of this is of this person's time would be on water specifically?
So basically what we plan for this position is a split cost amongst multiple divisions, amongst the plant, amongst water and sewer, and power as well, because we're looking to bring the power grid into the SCADA system as well. So it would be a shared position through amongst a bunch of different departments.
I mean, this sounds, of all of them, it sounds like pretty vital group. I don't know if Gary's saying I don't want it today, then I'm inclined to agree with him because, you know, we're trying to tighten our budget. But I would like to be able to look at something in a few months and say, okay, we're halfway through the year. What's our budget look like, and can we do this? Because you know, it's only $30,000 a year. We might spend $100,000 or more on this person, but it sounds like we could potentially get a lot more out of them in the long run if we had somebody full time. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
And again, that's where I'm talking about is if we're buying, if every single year it's already in the budget, we're already spending $30,000 a year towards that type of work. If we brought in someone who could maybe half or two thirds of their time be doing exactly this and also doing one of the other things on this list, that's the kind of middle ground that I would be really in favor of here.
Well, and if they spent X number of percentage of times working on, you know, X wells, and it prolonged the life of that well, or it gave us an idea in advance what we were doing, we wouldn't have to have the big late night well emergency meeting to okay something. And I just use that as an example. So,
okay. No, we definitely, that is a position, one of the positions that, like you say, on this list is one of the most, you know, would be one of the most crucial, because that will allow us to take our electrical and SCADA system to a whole other level.
Now you mentioned a moment ago that Tech 3, if you hired an actual Tech 3, they could be doing a bunch of other things. What did that include any of what we've just been discussing or no?
Well, the Tech 3 and Tech 1, basically they would be in the you know, in the same realm.
Okay.
So basically assisting our civil engineers is what those positions do. And review design, drawings, things like that. Working with our civil engineers.
And that funding would be throughout all the enterprise programs as well as some non-enterprise funds, correct? Their work.
Is that how the Tech Freeze work?
The funding would just come from whatever fund that they're working for. So
yeah.
Yeah.
We don't have a specific amount, but the answer would be, yeah, okay.
Right.
And out of all of those, like you mentioned, you know, looking, because we are going to get one Tech 3 that's in the budget this year, and we're in the process of looking for that individual. So we will have that kind of that dual role person being able to do some stuff behind the civils. But on this list, like the most crucial on this list would be the electrician instrument for sure.
Right. Again, just to belabor this, I'm saying if you can get somebody who can be doing that, like with 2/3 of their time and doing something else off this list with 1/3 of their time, I would consider that to be a really big win rather than just hiring nobody.
Right.
Like getting a little bit of a bunch of these things handled is the kind of direction I'm in favor.
Can we have a breakdown, even if it's just emailed to us, about what the how much that would cost per fund? Because that would make it a little easier for me rather than say, well, that's another $120,000 in sewer, which means this rate. If it was put out in a little in a way that it would go over all the funds, at least it would give us a better idea of how to manage it.
Yeah. And I can get you to it. It's a couple slides, or actually, it's not in the slide, but it's in your packet. So we've created these new FTE justification forms. And the ones that we're going to be proposing as we would really like to have this year are in the back. So basically, this is what we're putting together, so you can get a clear picture of what's going to happen, what the role of that individual is, you know, and then the ramifications if we get them. This is what we're going to do. If we don't, this could be, you know. But and I do have one of those for that electrician. / instrument tech.
Thank you. I can answer that question now. For which fund, how many funds would that person be working on?
So it'll be the plant, it'll be sewer, water, power.
So there'll be about 40,000 per fund. Because it'd probably be around 120 grand with salary benefits, each fund, three funds. So it'd be around 40,000 per fund is what that would cost.
So Gary, I just want to say, looking at this, you've done a really wonderful job of detailing what the job duties of these two people are, what it will mean for the city, and what it will cost. And I think, Steve, did you do the one on the water, I believe? It's very, very well done. Gives us a lot of information that we can use to think about this.
I want to put a plug in there. So Gary and Manroop and Steve, they're fantastic. Gary and Manroop are doing an incredibly good job at Public Works, and you're getting quality like this that is just fantastic. So, yes.
I just had a quick question on the water quality coordinator. Say no internal promotion, the current employee's position would need to be backfilled. Do you have somebody already on staff that you think's well qualified for this that'd be able to jump in right away?
So we do. It would have to be a posting, but we do have an individual who has been getting all the credentials that the water quality coordinator would need to have. So there is a very good potential of that, yes.
And then backfilling their position, what does that look like?
So that would just be basically a maintenance worker, an entry-level maintenance worker to come in and help out. Basically on the, you know, we've been kind of getting a look ahead on upcoming requirements and just, we see the regulatory, you know, pipeline coming, and it's going to get much more stringent. And this water quality coordinator will be a huge help, not only get us up to snuff currently, but, you know, we'll have somebody in place to help, you know, build the program and take it to the again another level, in which is going to be required of us coming right down the road here within a couple of years. So it's going to be crucial to get that person in house.
Gary, that actually touches on a question I wanted to ask about your regulatory compliance requirements. Can the city face, let me back up, what are the potential consequences if you are found not to be in compliance? Are there financial consequences, or I imagine there could be administrative findings of some sort, but are there potential financial implications for the city if you're found out of compliance?
So there are some. It's not, you know, we have to, you know, do our chlorine testing and all of that's got to be up to snuff, and that's what Steve does. And Steve right now is one of our only in-house folks that has the credentials to do that. And this individual is going to help Steve out a lot too, because, you know, he not only is running the liquids division, but he's also out in the field, you know, running our samples as well. So, so there are, but, you know, with the meetings that we've been in with our regulators, what's coming is a whole nother level. It's going to be a lot more sampling, a lot, you know, we'll be identifying lead in our systems, not only in the main, but the services to the homes. It's just a whole nother layer of regulation coming our way.
Who handles your oversight? Is that ecology?
So DOH. And
Department of Health?
Yeah. And ecology as well.
Okay.
Both.
So Gary, this isn't a question for you to answer today, but it's maybe something we need to think about as a city council. Are there things that we can do in the code for people who are building new that will help you out to meet some of these water requirements? Or is this something that comes straight from the plant and it doesn't matter what happens down the pipeline, it wouldn't make a difference?
Is there anything you can think of on that one, Steve? You're the kind of the water guru. I'm
going to talk to Michael. Oh, I wasn't expecting to speak tonight, but thank you. One of the big changes is the backflow testing program. It didn't used to include irrigation, and it will now. And if you think about like the homes in Semiamu, you know, they all have irrigation systems. So every one of those is going to have to be tracked and required to do annual inspections. And someone's going to have to be in charge of that. And there's, I don't know, 600 homes out there now, which we're not doing now. So
why do they all have irrigation inspections needed versus new homes in the center of land?
So when a backflow device is installed, the plumber has in the past had a option of filling out a form that goes to the Department of Health, and that's how it's tracked. But that is like probably 1% of the time. So this person's gonna have to go out and do some investigative work. It's regulatory, the Department of Health mandates that we do it. So we're paying half of a position right now to the treatment plant operators to do this work, and they need more help. It needs to be more help.
Okay. Great. I'd like to just real quick. So we have CIP left.
Mm-hmm.
She said it'd be about 30 minutes. So, and it's 5:32 right now.
We can do it. Can we revisit some of this water stuff in, I don't know, January, early February, just because, you know, if we have 1,000 homes over the next ever many, if we know ahead of time, we can do something to help Gary and his group out. I mean, it's obviously not something we're gonna finish today, but can we look at that beginning of February? Is that okay with you guys?
Sounds good to me.
Dave, sound all right? Mm-hmm. Sir?
Hey, can we do CIP on speed search here?
And again, it's my pleasure to finally introduce Andrew Carr. She is our Public Works Project Manager. That's her title. However, she does much more public works than just that. So she's been here with us since early summer, and she's been fantastic. So again, it's a pleasure to introduce Andrew.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council Members. Thank you, Gary. So as part of today's presentation, I'll be going over a 2023 Public Works Capital Improvements Plan. So starting over, the overview of this portion will be basically, first of all, introduction to CIP, and then going over 2023 capital improvements plan for all the different types of funds that we have. First of all, the general question that came to mind is, what is a capital improvements plan? So CIP basically contains any and all types of projects and major studies that have been identified for sustaining and improving the community's infrastructure. So the plan, having an existing approved plan, also provides a working blueprint to the staff to advance the community's long-term goals and objectives as we grow and as we improve. There are majorly two different aspects of any capital improvements plan. One is a capital budget and the other one is a capital program. So what goes into capital budget is what's our upcoming year's spending. In our case, it will be what we'll be spending throughout 2023. And capital program is basically the expenditure plan that we have, which extends beyond 5 years of 2023. So in this case, it will be our plan that the projects we need to do from 2024 to 2028. Then I just put together an example sheet to basically, so that everyone in today know how we have made these CIP sheets and how we can read them efficiently. So as we discussed capital budget, so anything that's under 2023 column will be our capital budget. And from 24 to 28 will be part of capital program. So in the sheets that I handed over to all the council members, the projects, name of the projects and a very brief scope is listed in the vertical, along the vertical columns, and then horizontally we have put together the amount that we'll spend for that particular year in a for that particular project in a particular year. And at the very end, we have also put together brief notes about every project so that it can help us understand what's the brief scope of every project is. Now, if you don't have any questions on how we made these sheets or how we go over these sheets, then I can start with our very first fund.
So a quick question, are they in order of priority in your guys' opinion?
So basically, whatever is identified in 2023 is identified as number one priority. And then there will be some programs initiated that will lead to some other projects that we eventually follow through from 24 to 28. So I'll start with the electrical fund. So for this, for the sake of this presentation, my major focus will be for year of 2023, how many projects we have planned in total and how many will be in construction and how many will be in design. So if I start with the electrical fund, there are total 7 projects identified for year 2023. 4 of them will be in design, 1 will be in construction, and 2 will be design and construction both. Apart from the projects, an important part of electrical CIP, or also the electrical MNO, will be to update our comprehensive plan for electrical. We have a draft from 2016 that will develop fully. And so how an updated comprehensive plan helps with our capital planning, basically comprehensive plan identifies all the important infrastructure maintenance and new infrastructure needed for our development throughout the years to come. So that having an updated and approved comprehensive plan help us guide through developing these projects with more accurate budgets and more accurate timelines. So we have a draft in Public Works right now that we are working off. So we'll appreciate if we can get an approved 100% fully executed comprehensive plan for electrical. It will identify city's electrical needs and what improvements are needed throughout our electrical department infrastructure. So for the sheet, as identified by row 1 and row 2, these are basically not just a one project. These are a program, or I'll say more like 4 to 5 years program that we'll be initiating in 2023. It's a combination of pole replacement and cable replacement. So in pole replacement program, we'll identify what are the major above ground poles that we have and any overhanging infrastructure we have. And to we identified those and put together an effort to underground wherever feasible. The number second, cable replacement. This basically helps us identify any aging electrical related conduits and cables that we have. We identify them in 1 year, and the following year we'll replace that old infrastructure. So these are two, I'll say, subsections or sub programs that we'll be initiating from 2023. It will be a rolling effort for next 4 to 5 years. The most important and the major project that we have from Electrical Fund for 2023 is the construction of Circuit 17, a 600 amp reliability loop. So what this project will do, that after completing the construction of this project, this will take off load from Circuit 16, which will free Circuit 16 to provide support to our East Plain growth. So this will be our major focus for 2023. It's in 95% design and will go out to bid first thing in 2023. And then it will follow construction throughout 2023 in different phases. Other ones that I have on a list and will be in design and or feasibility study is the Semiamo Circuit 11 feeder upgrade. This is basically providing running a parallel line in the Semiamo neighborhood, which will help us to support any outages that might happen in that region that we don't, that will help us to identify where outage is, and only that neighborhood loses power rather than whole Semiamo is out of power for that duration. Another that will be feasibility and will be giving more thought to the project is a new inventory shed. We'll study our existing inventory sheds, that how better we can use them or how we can retrofit them and basically enhance their usability. And if that will work, then we'll change this project to retrofitting our existing inventory sheds. And if the end of the feasibility is like, no, we really cannot retrofit at at less cost. So we'll be looking for the opportunity to build new and more secure inventory sheds for our equipment. At the very bottom of the sheets that you have, provides the summary which highlights the total project costs and the funding sources we have available. So like for electrical, from year 2023 to 2028, we are in pretty good shape, even with our capital reserve and the operations money that we make, we are able to pay for most of the projects that we are proposing for this 6 year window. Next fund on my list is the So in terms of wastewater fund, we have identified total 11 projects on the program. When I say on the program, that means from 2023 to 2028. Five of these projects have been identified for 2023. Three of these five will be in design, one will be in construction, and one will be design and construction both. The most important project, or maybe the star of the year project, will be the construction of the G Street sewer improvements. We have completed the design for this portion and will be going out to bid. So this project will see a construction window of 6 months from April to August. Other than G Street, the next important project on Public Works wastewater side list will be, again, introducing a 4 year or maybe 5 year long program to identify our various infiltration and inflow problems and then rehabilitating those problem areas. It will not be an easy task. We can identify these areas that there is like stormwater directly going into our sanitary, but to replace and rehabilitate them will be a challenge. We have put together a preliminary cost estimate that how we can repair the joints and how we can do temporary repairs, and then make it like do it in different phases so that we don't have to bear all of the cost at once. Another project identified in terms for 2023 is the improvements related to our lift station capacity and instrumentation. So right now we have two lift stations that are in design phase, and that is lift station number 10 and lift station number 3. We'll be completing their design in 2023, and then our tentative schedule says that we'll go out to construction in 2024. There is a reason that why we are proposing only one project for construction related to sewer, because G Street is a big project and we'll be digging up almost 6,000 feet of sewer and streets. So we really don't want to push any other sewer related infrastructure for construction in 2023. So that's why we have deferred the construction of both the lift stations to 2024. If we look at the financial summary for the wastewater fund, you can see that for G Street, we were able to secure a grant from Department of Commerce. There's an existing sewer bond, and there's the EDI grant and loan for G Street. So G Street is basically not 100% relying on our capital reserves, but we were able to secure some good grants for the project as well. If we look down the line, by the year 2025, my balance shows us negative, but this does not mean that it will stay that way. The one reason is for that is we are not transferring anything from operations to capital reserves for this year. And also, I have next year to work with different agencies and to go out for different types of grants that we can secure for the proposed projects that we have for construction, the projects that we have proposed for construction in 2024. So those types of grant opportunities and financing opportunities have not been identified here yet. But a public works team will be working actively so that how we can secure more funds for 2024 and we can decrease our reliance on our capital reserves. And this will not be the case only for our wastewater projects, but this will also be case for our water-related projects, transportation-related projects, and our general buildings as well. Next one on my list is the Stormwater 2023 CIP. Again, the big and the most important highlight for stormwater capitals will be to update our comprehensive plan. We are working with our existing comprehensive plans for water and sewer, but our stormwater comprehensive plan is really outdated. It has not been updated since 1995. So that will be our very first proposal for 2023, is to update our stormwater comprehensive plan. Once we have an approved plan, that plan will eventually guide us through the coming years. Other than updating our comprehensive plan, we have identified various small projects that we can do with the help of our MNO staff and a little bit of consultancy support as well. Three projects have been identified for year 2023. One will be construction, and two will be the overall design and feasibility studies. If we look at the list, the number one, the storm sewer replacement and rehabilitation, is basically, this is the identification and joint repairs in our existing storm pipes that we have. The number two is our citywide survey of our ponds, city-owned ponds, and the development of an operations manual. When I say operations manual, what a manual will cover is basically guide our MNO staff that how we can maintain our ponds, how we can maintain our ponds that we get their maximum use. And it will act as like a guide to them that when to maintain which type of ditch, when to maintain which type of pond, and also having all the ponds surveyed. Basically, that will serve as a document that we can pass over to anyone, even though they don't have any knowledge from the past of City of Blaine, but they become aware that, okay, this is the storm infrastructure that we have. Although this is proposed as a separate project, but it will eventually get tied into our comprehensive plan. Because the survey and our overall identification of the system will become the part of the comprehensive plan updates as well. And then from number three onwards, it will be basically, once we have our plan in place, whatever actions have been identified in that plan will follow through from 2024 to 2028. There is one project on number five that says Dodd Street and Montfront Park. So there is an existing culvert which Public Works MNO is observing, monitoring right now. There's a potential that we need to upsize that culvert, but we are looking at an opportunity that we might get it, get a way to get it funded by WashDOT. But as of now, for all the proposed projects that we have on list, we have enough funds that we can continue work on the proposed stormwater projects. The next one and the most biggest one on the CIP list is the water. So water 2023 CIP is basically broken down into three subsections, water supply projects, storage projects, and transmission projects. Overall in the program, there are 22 projects. 11 total projects have been identified for 2023. There are three in design currently, and one we are proposing for construction, and seven will be design and construction because they are small projects from MNO perspective. Please bear with me for the water portion. So for the water, the most important ones are number one is the wellfield backup power. So wellfield backup power is the design and construction of the backup power genset for all the wells and the chlorine generation equipment that we will place in the wellfield. Number second project is the new chlorine generation system. We have done a part of that project in 2022, and it will be completed with construction in 2023. A portion that has been done is we did the bid to purchase equipment, our new hypochlorite generation equipment that will generate chlorine gas on site. We have secured the equipment, the bid has been out, it's been closed. And now we are finalizing the plans for the building where that equipment will go. And once we have the plans ready, we'll bid it and then build it in our wellfield. But its construction is proposed for year of 2023. Another important project is the source reliability. So from source reliability is basically how much water is there in our aquifer. So we'll be monitoring it will be called the groundwater monitoring program that will do for following 3 years from 2023 to 2025. Basically, this will use the 3 years data to make a comparison that how our system looks after the improvements and how was it before. When I say after the improvements and before the improvements, I mean, because we have rehabilitated 4 to 6 wells till this, and rehabilitation helps that how much water we can withdraw from these wells. And also number four, we'll be adding new wells for additional capacity. We have proposed addition of 2 shallow wells for year of 2023 and 1 deep well for year of 2024. We don't want to do all the wells at once because they'll start as exploratory wells and then they'll be formed as our permanent wells. So we are targeting to tap our shallow aquifer first. The fifth one is basically we'll continue to enhance our well field facilities. By enhancement means we'll be adding the refinements of our source samples. Sampling facilities, how we can enhance our electronics, how we can enhance our telemetry on the existing wells that we have. It will be a 5-year effort because we'll target 2 improvements every year. And then the next important thing that I have on water list is, or the major one that will that we will see in our next 2 years is basically public. We are planning to replace our 171 zone reservoir. That's our existing reservoir in the well field.
Have we asked for that money yet? That $4 million?
No.
Okay.
So in planning, we are proposing the design of that reservoir for 2023 and construction for 2024. We'll be looking for potentially a grant slash loan from Department of Ecology and from Public Works Water Board. We have requested $500,000 for ARPA from ARPA money to get invested into this project, and as it was presented to me that it will be a shared asset with the Birch Bay Water District, so they will also contribute to its construction. The next important thing on the water side is water system upgrades that are needed for East Plain growth. First thing is the wellfield pump station and the piping for our new 440 zone. So for the wellfield pump station, we'll be going out to start with the design next year. But why I have highlighted it in red and it's a set aside district, because we are still negotiating our what improvements are needed for the East Plain growth. Once we have finalized that, then those will eventually get added to the list here. But how we are paying for it and how we want to cover the financing for this, I guess City Manager Mr. David Wilbert has already briefed council about our TIF. So that program will eventually fund all the water-related infrastructure that we need to support the East Plain growth. So that will eventually get added, and we'll add that once we have the finalized list. The next portion of the CIP water budget is the storage improvements. So in storage improvements, basically we have our existing reservoirs, and these are our in-house MNO supported projects that will be we will be doing improvements on our existing reservoirs. For reservoir 330, it will be pressure washed and remove and replace exterior coating at Harvey Road Reservoir. The third portion is the transmission or distribution improvements. There is the most important one in the distribution is the EPA has revised the guidelines for lead and copper rule. So as Gary was mentioning, that a lot more compliance is moving towards our way. So what that compliance means is EPA has revised their lead and copper rule, which means that they have instructed all the municipalities to put together an inventory list or their network what type of material is carrying our water from source to the consumers. So we have to map our distribution network, identify how much lead pipe is there, how much anything that is made of lead is there, how much galvanized iron is there, and how much is asbestos. Once we have that inventory mapped, then we need to get that map approved from, we need to submit it to DOH and get it approved. And they just don't leave it at mapping. Then we need to come up with a plan, and we need to develop and get the plan approved that how municipality gonna replace all those lead piping that is existing in our system.
Great. I'm going to need to ask you to pause at this point now. The pace this is going, perhaps we should have started at 4 o'clock today instead of 4:30. Thank you very much for how you've been presenting this. You're kind of just going through all the line items of a very thick document here. Is there any items that the rest of council has seen in the remaining few pages that you'd like a specific walkthrough on? Because the time is short, so either we're going to invade into when we should start the regular council meeting, or we should pause this for.
Aren't we going to do this part two next meeting?
So we can come back and finish this up. I'd rather do that than push through it. So we'll
great.
I'd rather finish this. discussion rather than
Not hear it. Great. Okay, so we're going to have to pause this for today, and then the next time we're doing budget, we can just pick up where we left off. If you can make a note of where we were in this document. And we need to just recess for a minute or two and then start the main council meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Mayor Ruth.